Didn't prepare for tonight's talk.
I had the
idea of speaking on friends, or friendship. Right. I think that's very important. I had the idea from yesterday during a retreat in an interview. So I thought, that's a good topic. And plus someone has submitted that as a topic. We've encouraged people to submit topics for the next series of talks. We finished with the gateless barrier, and I wanted to speak on topics that's relevant to people that actually come here to practice. All of you. Questions from your life. And the difficulties, maybe, or need other ways of looking at things relevant for all of you. So I've kind of hesitated to send out an email or mailing list for that reason. We have a lot of people on our mailing list. For the past 5 years that we've been here, most of the people, there are some that found us online and want to sign up for the mailing list. Not too many. Most of the people have come through one time or another, taken a class, stopped by. So within the past 5 years, we have, how many do we have? 600? We have about 600 people on our mailing list. How many show up? Maybe 30s. Every week, the contents of the 30 people change. You know? But I would say maybe about one-fifth, perhaps, or one-sixth, like 100 people, rotating within that 30 to 50 people that show up. You know? Maybe not every week. There are some that come every week. And even come on retreats. Some are very diligent. They follow me to do the retreats that I lead in New York. I'll drive 12 hours. Oh, I'm sorry.
18.
18 hours.
What car do you have?
I drive fast.
Crammed up like sardines. Yeah.
So, after tonight's talk, if you have a topic that you would like to hear, just send an email to us. So tonight I'll talk about friends, the importance of friends. We can call tonight's talk Friends, Friendliness, and Friendship. That'll be tonight's talk. Give me a moment while I figure out. In Buddhism, recognize three types of friends. Three types of friends are most important. The Sanskrit word is Kalyana Mitra. A rough translation is virtuous friends. Sometimes people translate as virtuous spiritual friends, or good spiritual friends. There are three types. And they're very different than kind of daily life friends. Friends that we meet in daily life, some of them have been very good to us. But the people that we know, even those good to us, they are results of the winds of karma. The winds of karma. Sometimes we because we live in a particular neighborhood. We go to a particular school. And we can be very good friends. But when we move out, when our karma, which is another topic that I'll talk about, when our karma changed, conditions changed, inevitably, we too change, and the relationship change. So the kind of relationship is susceptible to conditions changing, you see? And most of the conditions in your life are not under our control. The place that we find ourselves in, the situations that we find ourselves in. The first that the Buddha Dharma recognizes is something that's lifelong or a continuum, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And we relate to them on a very deep level because we relate to them through practice. Something that that goes very deep within us, that touches us. And together help one another transform, supporting one another. It's like going through something with a group of people. That kind of relationship is very different. Like going through a kind of life-changing event or events that we can relate to these people on another level. We may not be, what is that word, bosom buddies, always hanging out and shop together, eat together. No, we may not, but when we see each other, it's a kind of depth there that we will know that if something were to happen to us, they will be there. If at the end of our life we need some help, they will be there. Yeah. They may be the first group of people that will be there. You know, if we were hospitalized or we were don't have a place to live, you know. So it's very different from ordinary friends that changes. When our mental state change, they change. When our external environment changes, they change. When our views, opinions change, when our fashion change, they change. You see? When trends change, they're gone. Yeah? Very different. So these three friends recognize the Dharma. First one is called teacher friend. Second one is called it's hard to translate. It's called friends engage in the same practice. Right? Whoever will transcribe this talk, you don't have to just skip the Chinese. Engaging the same act means Dharma peers, fellow like-minded Dharma practitioners. Right? And the third type are friends that support us in practice. A larger category. It's from the perspective of the practitioner. We recognize people that support us in the practice. And this relates to friendliness. Now the third category includes your friends, your family members, even. Fellow practitioners that allow us, support us to come to retreat, for example, to come to the sitting, for example, you know, to join events. But from the perspective of the practitioner, this also includes all people we encounter. People that provides favorable conditions for us, right? And also those that provide difficulties for us, challenges, right? They show us what needs to be done. I'll talk about that. And if we establish this, these three, then everywhere we go, we will have friends. And we will be able to establish friendship with all beings. So, the first type. People want the AC on, then try. If it can't hear, you can come closer. Okay. Maybe not the one in the back. Maybe really loud. I'll just use this. So if you want AC, you have to come closer to hear. These three are precious. And sometimes we go through life, sometimes it's hard to find a teacher, not any teacher, as our spiritual guide, but someone that you have a deep connection to, that you feel. You feel something there. We can study and learn from all kinds of teachers, you know? But someone that you will know, you will recognize. Maybe something that this person said, or typically the things that this person say really resonates with you, or the things that you need to hear, you hear it. It's a kind of a affinity there. It may take some time to recognize. First impressions, sometimes it's reliable, sometimes it's not. And that's because a teacher will manifest when we're ready. It's like this. It's like being inside of a house. If we want to see the sunlight, we have to open the door, open the windows, allow light to come in. Sometimes we've been enclosed in the space for so long that we've forgotten to open the window. We don't let anyone come in. It's hard. Maybe we're hurt or whatever. So it takes practice, it takes effort on our part to allow the light to come in. We have to make the effort to open the windows. And that's practice. And that's what I mean by when I say teachers manifest when we're ready. So when we engage in Dharma practice, then you will see what's around you. Maybe you'll begin looking for a teacher, or check out different teachers. And the more we practice, the more you'll be able to recognize. And that's like opening the windows, opening the doors. the teacher can be far away, sometimes the teacher can be very close to us. When I first come across Buddha Dharma, I have two teachers at different times in my life. I consider them my two teachers, one of which is my root teacher. That's Master Shen Yan. Prior to that, I met this other teacher, even younger, when I was 4. So from age 4 to age 11, I used to visit Master Guangqing. He's the person who first taught me how to sit in meditation in Taiwan. He's known as the fruit monk. Fruit, because that was his diet for decades. He only ate fruit. He was an ascetic monk. And very small, very skinny, very frail. Perhaps because he only ate fruit, he's had a hunchback. You know, his bones, from years of doing that, it's just changed. Bone structure. You know. But he was one of the great meditation masters in China, in 20th century. I didn't know at the time. He had a disciple who was a math student of my teacher, who taught math. Became a nun. So we used to, it was kind of like a family friend. We visited her every week, you know, at this temple. And this temple was very dangerous. He was an ascetic. And this is the guy that in human history, maybe, he's up there in terms of meditation skills. He was in samadhi for about 1 month. Do you all know what samadhi means? How many of you do not know? Meditative absorption, meaning not in hibernation like a animal, in meditation, immobile, pure concentration. All the scriptures talking about dhyana or jhana, meditation heavens. It's, you know, this is what we're talking about, right? The mind reaches utmost concentration, and there are many different levels. Can you imagine that? Not eating, we're not talking about no food, no toilet for 1 month regularly. Not like a blind cat catching a dead mouse. Luck. Like stumbled upon. So this is one of the great ascetic meditation master. He's the one that some of you may have heard a story when he was in China. This is before 49. He was born right after the collapse of the Qing Dynasty, I think. So, before 49, Qing Dynasty collapsed 1911. So he was born after that, or maybe 1908, I'm not sure. So somewhere around that time. So meditating in the mountains of southern China, found a beautiful cave, perfect shelter against the elements. Little did he know, other sentient being was already occupying that cave, right? A tigress and her cubs. Tigress are worse than tigers. Tigers are very protective of their cubs. They are out hunting, you know, for some days. He's there meditating, you know, in his samadhi. When he woke up, came out of it, at night, the tigers came back, just lying there. Imagine like you're in a zoo, except you're not in a car. It's just right there, lying next to him. The tigress is checking him out. like, this is it's my house. You're in my house. And so he looked over and says, he talked to the tigress. He says, I'm sorry, I didn't know this was your house. I will leave, but it's getting late, so I'll leave tomorrow. Kind of like negotiating with the tigress. I'm not going to run away now. I'll leave tomorrow, and I'll leave you alone. Went back to meditation. That kind of peace and presence, you know, peace derived from meditation, right? For those people that go on retreats, when you go back home, maybe your family will recognize you have this glow in you. It's kind of very peaceful, not argumentative, you know. Imagine you can enter samadhi and the peace that comes out of that, exude out of you, every pore, that presence, animals will feel it. Animals will feel it. They know you're not a threat. They know you're not going to threaten the cubs. Right? It's my first meditation teacher. He gave me the name Path of Wisdom. He told me how to meditate. At that time, I learned meditation just because I could do it. And I really, really liked him. I couldn't communicate with him because he spoke the Southern Chinese dialect, the mean dialect, not Mandarin. But we were like pointing fingers, pointing leg, go up, you know, pat me on the head. So I related to him that way. And sometimes we were sitting in his room where he received guests for a long time. You know. Oh, by the way, he was also famous for miracles. He would chant the great compassionate Dharani over a vase of water, and people would drink that water. They would regularly cure cancer, regularly cure illness. But his place, he was an ascetic, so he didn't like a lot of people. So he placed his temple with no trails on a particular mountain in Tuchen, in Taiwan. And people, of course, discovered him and became his monks and nuns and built trails, kind of homemade car trails. But it was always very dangerous. I remember that clearly. Because some of the uphill, if it had been raining, cars would slide backwards down the edge of a mountain. So it was really a test whether you're meant to see him or not. You know, and Taiwan is raining. You know, raining, a lot of rain. It was just dirt, mud trails, you know. Nowadays, that temple is very fancy. You know? So from 4 to 11, we would go at least once a month, sometime, many times, twice or three times a month to see him. I would play in the monastery. He would kind of watch me play. I wouldn't say play with me. He would watch me play. And in temples, later on, they started to have fortune telling at the temple. Tallies, you know. Chinese people are, some of them are superstitious. So these tallies come in stock. You can buy them. All the fortunes, you know, it's like a resale. It's like a wholesaler that sells all the different kind of fortune. You can just buy them. You can buy the stick. So they got that too, you know. So I would keep on shaking the tally stick until one stick falls out. The stick has carved a certain number. Then you go to the chart to find the number, and you get that piece of paper. That's your fortune. I remember Julia shaking, get my stick, you know, until I get a good fortune. I would go to him, is that good? He says, I would go back. And then stick come out, is that good? Let's do it again. I would just play in the temple, very playful. And he would welcome that. And taught me to always meditate. You know, to always meditate. So my love for meditation actually come from 4 years old onward. And you know why I love it? I love it because I loved him. You know? So it's a kind of a deep resonance that I felt with him. Just a liking. You know? Second teacher I had that. You know, my family migrated to the United States. So I had to leave. Next time I went back when I was 16. He had already passed away. And I wanted to go there to the temple. It had completely changed. New buildings, paved road, but the chair that he always sat on was still there in the abbot's quarter, turned, converted into a memorial room, hall for him. I remember when I was 16, I came here when I was 11, 10 and a half, 11, to the United States. When I was 16, I passed away when I was 15, I think. But I had heard the news, and when I came back to Taiwan to visit my father didn't come with us to migrate. I wanted to, the first thing I wanted to do is visit the temple. Very, very fond memories there. No expectation of what to see. I was expecting the old temple. Went there, and everything had changed. I was just captivated by this and that, you know. But when I saw his room and the chair, and next to it a glass case of his relics, I just crashed down on my knees. His tears come out like faucets. Uncontrollably, it was my teacher. So that made a very deep resolve, path of wisdom. Second time I felt that was with Master Xing Yan, 11 years old when I came here to the United States. Deep resonance with him. And he took a liking of me. We would go on picnics. I was the only child, aside from a very little girl, that a member of the community had. The mother was now a Dharma teacher. So her daughter was younger. And I was 11, she was maybe 5. So only 2 kids. So we were really pampered. And growing up in that environment, we would go there on a weekly basis. And I studied meditation with him formally again. And afterwards, went on retreats. And this deep resonance is something that you know when you feel it. You feel a connection. One time there was someone that came to our center. I was already a monk, who supposedly, I don't know if it's true or not, supposedly had supernatural power, clairvoyance. Except it's not clairvoyance. You know, there are different types of supernatural power within Buddhism recognized. This woman had the power of knowing past lives. Right. So, what drew her in the center was because she could see also auras. She wasn't a Buddhist. She became a Buddhist. After she came in our center, what she saw coming out through the walls of the center was light, very strong presence of light coming out, beaming out. I don't know if you believe or not. I don't know if I believe or not. She came in. It was dark because it was Sunday meditation. You know, lights are dimmed. But there are two people in front who were the source of the light beaming out. Not a reflection on our bald heads back then. You know? And she was moved to tears. That's how she became a Buddhist. The two lights were Master Shen Yan and his stupid attendant sitting next to him. And afterwards, that night, that day, after the sitting, she bowed down to both of us. And she says, it's very rare that able to encounter you, teacher, my teacher. And so my teacher welcomed her and says, and she shared what she said that she saw, and she said, you know, about light beaming off. And my teacher just smiled. We hear all kinds of crazy stuff. All kinds of stuff that people said about this and that. So we just don't really just accept. Okay, good. Now that you come, you practice, learn meditation, practice with us. And she began practice. And she says, by the way, that him pointing to me, he has been with you since around 12th century. We're in 20th century. He says, your student there, he was with you dating back to Song Dynasty. You can take it, leave it. When I heard it as a novice, I was like, great. My teacher is like, him? Okay. Not really a supporting evidence for why we feel connected with people. But from the Buddhist perspective, at least, we recognize that people are, we don't have just one life. You know? Why we come across certain people and we just feel connection, why we don't. From my perspective, all of you, right? It's not the first time that we meet in this life. So some feel deeper, some not as deep, right? But all, not the first time. Not the first time. I can't tell you when, but not the first time. But only having this connection, this resonance, is not enough. Because a teacher friend, virtuous friend, should embody certain characteristics. First and foremost, they must have correct views of Buddha Dharma, that they can actually give guidance, they can actually help us in our practice. Second, they must have patience. patience to hear. And this patience is connected to the ability to contain, to embrace all walks of life. A magnanimous mind. Can you imagine if a teacher is narrow-minded, only, or engaged in kind of favoritism? That will cause chaos at a Dharma center. That would really, and then that will cause gossip. You know, all kind of problem would issue from that. You know, who's closer, who's not, who's got the in, who's got the out, who's out now. Teacher is equal, must be magnanimous, able to accept. You know, that's part of the patience. Another part of the patience is patience enduring of vexations. And this will have naturally come from the practice. You know, a teacher may have correct views, may be a nice guy, friendly to everyone, but they may not be able to endure vexations, which is vexations of the people that come, the problems that they dump. People that walk through church, walk through spiritual centers, Dharma centers, usually are people that need something, they want something, they're experiencing some difficulty in life, you know, there's some hardship, or they are looking for something, you know, they have trouble, one degree or another. So the teacher must be able to absorb and not be absorbed by it. Patience, endurance of vexations. So vexations come, teacher will have to have the ability to be like a humongous garbage can, humongous recycling composter. Things come your way, it becomes Buddha Dharma. And it becomes nourishment for that teacher. Right? I'm not saying you start giving me your phone bills and your, you know, all kinds of stuff. Because the teacher founded on his or her own spiritual practice. They may have experienced a taste of genuine Dharma, which is Nirvana, their true nature. What they need to do is to accumulate experience in teaching. It's called acquired wisdom. They may have had a taste of fundamental wisdom, our true nature, either through understanding or through practice, but they must have expedient means. And expedient means all the Dharma doors, all the approaches to Dharma. And what are Dharma? It's not in the scriptures. Scripture only give guidelines, very rudimentary. All the Dharma, the manifold issues of sentient beings, the problems that they experience, that is the Dharma. Because on the basis of the fundamental true nature, when it comes in contact with challenges and difficulties, it will naturally manifest the answer. And that is something alive. That is something very dynamic. Right? Encountering suffering. When it comes across self-nature, it will manifest as gratitude. It manifests as humility. Treating those that suffer as great teachers. Those that suffer tremendously as bodhisattvas in manifestation. Normal people cannot possibly fathom that. You know? At most, what generates in normal people when they encounter suffering is pity, sympathy, kindness. Right? But treating them with respect reverence, like a bodhisattva. Not understandable. Those people that die in war, those people that die through conflict, you know, naturally, when self nature or true nature manifests in that, if a teacher is in tune with that, Buddha Dharma will manifest. They are like the compost. Whatever you throw in it, it comes out, nourishment. If a teacher is narrow-minded, only knows one dharma or one way of teaching or one method or something, they may not be able to. And they will have to learn. By what? By all walks of life, sentient beings from all walks of life. The more they come in contact with, the more they're able to teach. See? And that too is part of this patience enduring of vexations. Another quality is that they have virtue, which is related to precepts, morality, ethics. They are grounded. Because they are in tune with their self nature, they will never do something harmful to sentient beings and take advantage of people, especially people that come to the center, come to the Dharma, because they seek something. They're vulnerable, maybe, sometime. Right? Or they have some fancy idea about what a spiritual teacher is. Very easy to be taken advantage of. The teacher, in accordance with self-nature, is in accordance with precepts, morality, ethics. And they will not harm sentient beings. No. There are many other good qualities that we will have to see. We can use common sense to judge. From the perspective of the teacher, they don't see themselves as teachers. From their perspective, they see all beings as teachers. Why? You're the one dumping all the opportunity sources of wisdom for him, that draws out the compassion for him, so that he can learn and fulfill his vow of mastering limitless approaches to Dharma. If that's not teacher, who is? So the teacher will be humble. But for the student's sake, we cannot say that I'm my teacher's teacher. From the student's sake, in order to learn, we must see ourselves as students. See? Just like cup of water. The cup must be lower than the jar of water. If it's higher, turned upside down, or has a big hole on the bottom, water go in and leaks out, or it doesn't even go in the first place. You see? So the cup must be lower than the jar can come in. But a good, virtuous, spiritual friend, teacher friend, will not put on air as a teacher. Right. Does that make sense? Right. These are the kind of qualities. And of course, you know, we have this resonance. Having this resonance is insufficient. Having resonance may mean you have a strong karmic affinity with that person. But it may not be a virtuous affinity. You see? So, it may be just on a deeper level, it may be just another condition that blown in the wind. At this phase of your life, you will come in contact with this. But a spiritual teacher friend is for our whole life and lifetime after lifetime. We take up different identities. We still study with that person. So that relationship is very different than an ordinary teacher-student relationship in which students graduate. In this spiritual relationship, students never graduate. We can see this in the history of Chan. At least in China, a student, once they settle on a teacher, they don't really leave that teacher until that teacher passed away. Then some of them will continue to study with another teacher for another 10, 15 years, and then move on. Or sometimes the teacher says, now you go to another mountain, open another center, you practice. Yeah. Even when the student have received recognition of some kind of spiritual realization, the student wouldn't leave. So it's kind of deep. Because once we find a teacher and they engage in practice, then they form a bond that's founded on something much greater than life, even. All the material things in life. And they have gone through the process together. Right? They have traveled, walked the path together. Yes, a teacher walks the same path as a student. Both parties are practicing. You see? So there's something very deep. Second type of friendship is fellow like-minded practitioners as friends, Dharma friends, Dharma peers. This is also something very unique. Because it is through practice that we free ourselves from discrimination. Free ourselves from grasping, rejecting, judgment. And the criteria is very different than the standards of the world. And I'm sure all of you feel this, some one degree, some other degree. How we are judged out in the world, when you walk in here, you feel welcomed. You don't feel judged. When out there, people judge us by the way we look, our social status, right? Our influence, our ability. How many of you have felt this? When you come here, you don't feel like you're being judged. Raise your hand. Yeah. So no matter what you look like, what you have, don't have, what you're able to do, not do, you're accepted. That's something very unique, very unique. And that's created by the community of practice, practitioners, right? That's something that doesn't follow the winds of condition that blow to the left, blow towards the right. Doesn't follow trends in samsara, right? The world of suffering, the world of materialism, the world of discrimination. This is something that founded on a whole other set of criteria. We may not associate with the people that we hang out with them all the time. We could, and the teachers usually encourage people to meet outside the center, to have a cup of tea, to form book clubs. Our book club will be held outside the center. First meeting will be here, but outside, a cafe, someone's house, kind of build that relationship. Right? Because these are the type of friends that will last a lifetime. Especially when we go on retreats, intense retreats with them. Wow. The experience is very different. Everyone's silent. We're all together. Yet, everyone is an individual. We're alone with our method. Yet, we're with everyone. It's a very strange dynamic. And we'll be able to relate to them just by seeing other people sitting and seeing their struggles. And we keep silent and practicing with them, sitting next to them. And someone may be coughing. Someone may need something. Other people will come along, bring a box of tissue without words or an extra towel. Right? That feels very different. How many of you have experienced this? No. If you haven't, you're missing out on something. Gotta come on retreats. Gotta come on retreats. So the atmosphere practice that everyone come together and create is very special. Very special. Kind of peers in Dharma. Now there may be, it's not a rosy place that there's no conflict, there's no bickering, there's no kind of you know, argument. Obviously they are.
Not us.
Obviously people witness them, right? But still, everyone's on the same path, and it's very different. It's very different. You know? You may think that monasteries, most ideal form of Sangha, is the like the Pure Land, right? We go there and it must be Sangha. There's nitpicking, there's, you know, monks and nuns, you know, there's cohorts, little group cliques, you know.
Human nature,
right? But everyone has a kind of a mutual understanding that goes beyond that, deeper, that we're here to practice, you know, and we're, you know, for example, a sangha, studying under a teacher, studying with a teacher, you know, so it's very different, very unique, you know? Sangha is a community of practitioners that we can confide in. Some things we cannot tell our friends outside, but some things we can tell, we can share our troubles with fellow practitioners. Because fellow practitioners are different. They're all learning. If they study with the right teacher, right? If the teacher is actually teaching them to practice in daily life, to take life as practice, all the vicissitudes of life, right? Difficulties come in, transform, become the compost, transform into Buddha Dharma. So everyone is practicing that. So whatever you tell them, they will not judge you. They will try their best not to judge, and they will take it as practice. They will support. You see? Do people feel that? Do people feel that here? No. Okay. So, the third type are those people that support us in practice. Family members, from the perspective of Dharma, they are our spiritual friend. What type? Maybe the family spiritual friend. Right? or the friend spiritual friend, or stranger's spiritual friend, you know, or boyfriend, girlfriend, spiritual friend, right? They support us. Like, for example, Matt came here for the whole 3-day retreat, left his girlfriend at the home. His girlfriend.
Huh? I took care of the dog.
You took care of the dog. See? It used to be shared obligation. Now the girlfriend takes care of it. She is your Kalyana Mitra, spiritual friend. She supports you. This is the third category. She allows you to come. I have 3 at home. 4, counting my cat. My pet that allows me to come, right? So very grateful to them. We respect that, right? We have to respect that. Beginning with those people that immediately provide support for the practice, those people that allow us to come, those people that actually made the food for the retreat, those people who donate $0.25, $1 to keep the electricity going in this place, they support us. Are we worthy of receiving the support? How have we treated them? So we have to, with great care, recognize that. Allow gratitude, which is part of our self-nature, the natural manifestation of selflessness, to manifest. Right. Recognition. And if we haven't done our part, allow sense of humility to manifest, to freely flow forth from your true nature. Extending this immediate group of people that help us to practice to all those that come our way in life. The categories are friends, of course, right? Dharma peers, friends, family member, neutral people. Do you think you can live in America in peace? Practicing the Dharma? If all those people in the government, irrespective of what we feel about certain things that they do you think you can practice peacefully? This place, our ability to practice in the United States, is supported by these strangers. We don't personally know them, right? We hear of them. Do you believe that? Imagine trying to practice in the midst of warfare. That is equanimity. People may do harmful things, not so good things. But the culprit is not them. The culprit is vexations, greed, hatred, ignorance, jealousy, arrogance, doubt, suspicion, you know? They are the culprit. The people are just puppets under the influence of these, and they do certain harmful things. See? But their true nature, unaffected by these. They just need to recognize and learn to manifest. So we can say we are grateful to all those people that help us, not grateful to the people that don't help us. If we see flaws, if we see bad people, we ourselves are flawed. Are we oblivious? Become dumb, don't know civil law, don't know government law, don't know international law, don't know what's right and wrong. No, we see it. But in your mind, if you're disturbed, vexed, torn, that means you are already in the wrong. You're vexed. We talk about mindfulness, right? We've become mindful of vexations. Mindful of vexations. See? A person in tune with self-nature do not see the flaw of the world. They are at peace. They see all beings manifesting their Buddha nature, their self-nature, in a multitude of ways. Some harming other beings, some beneficial, some neutral. But they see that as a manifestation, a function of their clouded Buddha nature. Huh? They discern what is at stake. It's not the people. It's the world is under the control by vexations. They can see through that. It's not the people. So, which draws out their compassion. So able to extend to the rest of the world, to everyone that we come in contact with. And they become sources of your path. The juice, the oil that keeps this practice going, the nutrients. That's why, from a practitioner, one can say that those that suffer are bodhisattvas. Those that inflict suffering are bodhisattvas. To us, for our own practice. It doesn't mean objective world out there, they are causing suffering, they are bodhisattvas. And we don't utilize some teaching like this world is a dream. You know, it's all dreaming anyway. That's a little bit like self-delusional. No. We have to discern vexations when it's present. We have to be able to discern that when vexations are present, when vexations are absent. World is a dream. It's a very poetic thing to say. It's a very poetic thing to say. You know, we live in a world of dreams. You know, dreamy. You know, one day we'll wake up. You know, and the Buddha has also said that. But what he meant was, people are dreaming because they're vexed by vexations. They live the world, live out their lives, filtering the world through their own projections, through their own vexations. So it's not real. What they see, what they experience, what they taste, touch, feel, it's not real. It's they're following the winds of conditions. Right? So in that sense, they're just dreaming. Right? And there's a need to wake up. But first, we have to recognize the mechanism of this dream, that it's the vexations. Right? And we have to try our best to do something about it. But we ourselves have to be at peace. We have to be able to send loving kindness to both the inflictor of suffering and the receiver of suffering. Okay? So, the third category, starting with our immediate environment, those people that support us, extend to everyone we come in contact with. And everyone becomes a source of your respect. Respect. And you can learn from. Directly or indirectly. Through favorable conditions or through adverse, challenging, afflictive conditions, we're still able to learn. So they're still able to teach us. Does that make sense? Once we do that, then we will, the more we engage in practice, the more we will move on to the second topic, which is friendliness. Our ability to be friendly, no longer bound by those who are nice to us, but we'll be able to be friendly to all beings, right? Human beings, animals, you know, the world, inanimate objects. Naturally, what flows forth is environmental protection. Naturally, helping nature. Naturally, it's a natural response from our self-nature. You see? The more we are in tune with it, the more we become friendly. Does that make sense? Friends. Friendliness. And friendship. Friendship. It's something that lasts a long time. And it's nourishing. It is not casual. You know, if we look up dictionary of what friends mean, how many of you have tried to look up in the dictionary what friends mean? Friends, the meaning of friends in the dictionary. We all assume we know. What is friends? I looked it up the other day. Because times have changed. The meaning of friends also changed. Of course, they have the typical definition of someone who is nice to us. You can see, you can tell a lot how they define someone who is nice, who supports us. You know, I don't exactly know what I saw it some time ago. But I noticed something very unique. They say something that happens on Facebook or something like that. that you can friends. It has another layer of meaning, friends. You know, that's a new layer of meaning. A widening. I befriended someone. Friendship. So, the dictionaries constantly change. If you look at 17th century encyclopedia, what friends mean, it will be very different. If you look at, you know, 21st century nowadays, friends. Look it up. It has this other meaning. Like internet, you know, associates that you cannot become friends with. Isn't that fascinating? Right? That's not what I'm talking about. Friendship. It goes somewhere deep. It does not follow the winds of karma, the winds of condition, the winds of change. It's something that's constant, nourishing on a deep level, beyond material things. Something that connects us to the practice. It's friendship. And the immediate type of friendship would be our Sangha, our community of practitioners. Right? And then you'll be able to connect to more and more. Your ability to make friends, to establish friendship, if you engage in the practice, will begin to extend. Those people who don't practice, from the perspective of Buddhism, Buddha Dharma, lifetime after lifetime of rebirth, they're always reborn in the same cluster of people. Karmically, sentient beings are bound. It's the same. One time you're a mother, one time you're a daughter. Another lifetime you're a friend. Another time you're a pet. Another time you're, you know, distant. It's always the same. Always the same. Cannot break free from that shackle. But if you engage in Dharma practice, you will start to connect through your practice with people that you would have never thought you would be friends with. Right? Like when I hold retreats, there are people from Taiwan, there are people from Europe, there are people from different parts of the United States. They fly in to retreat, and then you become friends. So through the Dharma, your friendship starts to begin to widen. They help us. Through the Dharma practice, they help us to fulfill our vow to save all beings. We start to build karmic connections with people, more people. You see? Very important. Very important. And the more people we encounter, the more nourishment we receive, the more experiences we have, how to deal with different type of people, how to relate to them, how to connect with them, and we become experienced. We acquire what is called acquired wisdom, different than fundamental wisdom, right? I mentioned this earlier. So the Dharma teachers that I'm training, a group of a handful, we have about, how many people do we have? Like a dozen? A little less than a dozen? 10 people? Yeah. It's kind of like providing them with the opportunity to build different kind of relationship with other sentient beings that normally they wouldn't even talk to. Normally they wouldn't even connect to. And they travel with me to do retreats, then they will connect with others. Does that make sense? So friendship will widen, will deepen through the Dharma. So these are three types of friends that we recognize that help bring out the best in us, and that which is the best within us is our wisdom and our compassion. And all the accompanying attributes of our true nature. Right? Humility, reverence, devotion, right? Gratitude, all the virtues. Right? That's why in Buddhadharma we say all the virtues are contained within self-nature. That's a slogan in East Asian Buddhism. All the virtues are contained within self-nature. See? How can we relate to that? That's what the talk is about. So friendship, very important. Spoken too much, a lot. I had no plans on speaking so much. I thought this was going to be a short talk. But thank you for allowing me to share with you. Do you have questions? Can entertain a couple of questions? Yes. Huh?
Oh, it's icy.
Okay, Chiku?
Guangqing.
All of you, by the way, are connected to him. All of you. Because Guagu is connected to him. If Guagu has never met him, you will have never encountered Guagu. Who knows where he would be? You see? So all of you. And let me just add one more thing about friendship. Not only extend on a kind of a horizontal level, synchronic level, extend our friendship, this last aspect, on a vertical level, generation after generation. All of you belong to this lineage of charm. The more you practice, the more you connect with all the teachers of the past. All the teachers of the past, dating back to Shakyamuni Buddha. So when we manifest Dharma from our true nature, we connect with the Buddhas of the past, present, and future. People that have yet to come, right? We connect to them. You see? That's a kind of friendship that's why it's enduring. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Please, Guangqing.
I think me and him would be very good friends, but I love fruit.
That's why you come to here. No.
But I can't imagine just eating only fruit. But I was just wondering how just asceticism or just your diet in general could either help or just change or just modify the practice. How did it
I don't. All I know is what I can tell you, what I saw. You know, he only ate fruit. He drank juice too, but juice from fruit. You know, that's all he did since he was maybe in the 40s. He lived till 96, I think. You know, so his bones have changed, kind of arched back. That's what we can see. But there are other kind of nourishment. If a person is that accomplished, I don't think anyone normal can do that. So if one can sit in a cave with the tigers, then you can try to be a fruitarian. Fruitarian. So usually people need balanced diet, but other aspects of his body, and mind. Kind of start to take on other functions. Our body is amazing. You know, you can have a lot of potential that science is yet able to explain, but will explain in the future, I'm sure.
So is it just, you know, sort of like a person by person basis? I meant mm-hmm. more as like a general question of how what you can affect practice. I remember Chris had mentioned to me a little while ago that I think it was onions and garlic, you said, aren't allowed monster because
mm-hmm. Onion, garlic, shallot.
It affects your practice.
Yeah. Certain kind of food have effect. I can leave that, send an email to food and practice as a topic to talk about. I'll talk about that. But generally speaking, what we eat have an effect on us. The food that we eat have a lot of chemicals. We receive it directly, you know. The food is light. We feel kind of light. If food is heavy, we're weighed down. You know? Certain food builds in our bloodstream. Some doesn't. Some clarifies. Food that grow on earth. Food that grow on trees. You know? Because they take nourishment from the different conditions. Their nature is different. Certain kind of weather. So the Chinese and the East Asians categorize food, vegetables that is, if we limit it to vegetables, into different types, heat, cold, the earthy, metal. You know, they have some correlation with Western notions of food, of nutrition too. Like maybe some food with iron, metal, something, you know. So they affect us definitely. If a practitioner is in tune with the body, they will be able to see in their practice. They will sense different changes in the body. You know, as they practice. Okay. Any other question about friends, friendship, and friendliness? Yeah, Dwayne.
The category of friends that are nowhere on the same path that we are, maybe different religious practice, maybe none at all, but yet. You still
want to
associate with these people.
Yeah, they, of course, are within their campaign, though. So the question is, what about those people that are nowhere on the map in this threefold categorization? They're not even the same religious affiliation. But we want to be friends with them. No, we are friends with them. What do we do? Actually, those people are. Those people from our own perspective, they're the people that support us. You see? So, it's not to say, I definitely don't mean to say we only become friends with Dharma peers, right? We have all kinds of friends. I'm saying just the opposite. You know, we're friends with all beings, past, present, and future. You know, it doesn't matter what ideology people uphold. Faith, it's a kind of ideology. You know. Does that make sense? Yeah. And certainly the second aspect of my talk, friendliness. Right? If we have friendliness, if we cultivate Dharma, our friendliness will expand. So we'll be able to connect to all kinds of people. You know, my teacher was able to connect to all kinds of people. He connected with me. I was just a boy. But to a boy, he would say a Dharma suitable for a boy. To an elderly, he would speak the Dharma suitable for the elderly. He has no barrier. It's one of the traits, right? No barrier. Can go in, out, all situations at will. You see? At least from him, he's at peace. You know? One thing I didn't talk about is harmful friends. Harmful people. But they are friends. How many of you have them? Oh, you know, so we help them through our own practice. We never put a label on them. Labels is not part of your self nature. Labels is not part of your self nature. Don't manifest that. Right? Through our own practice, we can help them. If they want help. But through our own practice, the conditions will change. They may want to seek your help. You have to be skillful. Yeah, skillful means you have to lure their curiosity, their want to ask you something out of them. You can't give it to them. Does that make sense? You can't impose ideas on them, concepts to them. But you have to be skillful enough to draw that out of them. That comes from your practice. Does that make sense? And it's very complex, much more complex for this talk to cover. But you will find a way. You will find a way. Sometimes it takes that way that I'm talking about. Sometimes it takes distance. Sometimes it actually takes distance, distancing yourself temporarily from such friend. And then they miss you. They see that you're the friend. They want to be friends with you. And then you draw them. If you miss me, meet me at the Tallahassee Chan Center. And then you draw them out here. And you throw them to Guagu. You know, throw them to their compost. See what happens. You know, let Guagu deal with them. No, but joking aside, sometimes it takes distance. You know, we have to temporarily put ourselves away from them if we cannot handle them. Right? All people are sources of our Dharma, of our path. And they range. Some Dharmas are very advanced. They provide very advanced level of Dharma. And we are only elementary school students. So, sorry, apologize. I need to study a few more years before I, you know, learn from you. You know, in your mind, you have the courage to do that. Right? But you always have good intention, well wishes for them. But you need to separate yourself. Does that make sense? That takes wisdom to do that. You have to be in tune with who you are, what you have, what you can do, what you cannot do. Distinguish between what you want to do and what you need to do. That takes wisdom. The more you practice, you'll recognize. And then you'll be able to come back to them in the future. You see? Harmful. We don't say harmful people, we say harmful friends. So they're still in the category of friends. Right? Okay, have a good night. Thank you for coming. If you want to, you think you can take a few tickets, please come up to me or any of the members here. Help support.
You can't turn me off.
Today makes one more.